Hey, everybody, I think you know what it's time for. Jan, are you there?
This is the Hit Test. Hit Test. Info. JanPolet.com. Jan Polet.
Hey, feed up. It's time for another Hit Test again, and here we go with intro number one.
I know this one. It's on the tip of my tongue. Oh, I should have got that. Hello and welcome to another edition of Radio Free Radio's Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. When I was a mere 26 years old, my whole life changed. I experienced some sort of spiritual epiphany that I suspect many other people have gone through. This edition of Digital Flotsam is the story of how that all came about. In the spring of 1974, I turned 26. I believe that it was also during that spring that I joined the human race for the first time. To most folks, I'm sure it seemed as though I had qualified for that status for quite some time. But to me, that was the time that seemingly overnight, I stepped from being a selfish child to being suddenly aware of the world and my place in it. Up to that time, people were being easily fooled by lots of good qualities. I was young, strong, and immortal. I was talented, fun to be around, and I was already a husband and a father of two beautiful girls. But I was such a talented actor, and so unencumbered by reality, that I even fooled myself. I had no idea what an uncaring slime ball I really was. Until that spring. At that time, I had a good friend named Charlie. I had known him about 10 years. We had met in high school and had become fast friends. He was the perfect sort of friend to have at that age. We had all the same interests, liked the same music, had similar taste in clothes, had similar views on the trivial matters we faced each day. We clicked. We both were sort of outsiders, people likely to be voted class individual. Because of my acting and performing skills, I was pretty well known in our school. But well known does not equal popular. We were not in that group. In fact, I rarely saw Charlie interact with other students at all. He was quiet and shy. In fact, the only time he seemed to be relaxed and open was when he was around me. I often felt bad for Charlie. His shyness seemed so unfortunate. He was a good-looking guy, with an all-American kind of Jack Armstrong cleft chin, and his shyness actually made him sort of interesting to people, in a sort of a James Dean misunderstood youth kind of way. I tried my best to encourage him. I set him up with girls, arranged double dates, but his shyness appeared to be incurable. I even think I eventually stopped pushing him and just accepted that Charlie would eventually overcome his shyness in his own time. We stayed good friends after high school, and even after I got married, which I can't say for a lot of my high school friends. It seems that once you get married, you are no longer one of the guys anymore. But Charlie was different. Charlie was always there. Charlie could be counted on to always be a friend. That kind of totally unconditional friend, the kind who could come over even when the house was a mess and you'd still feel comfortable around. Charlie even babysat my girls, who loved him dearly. Charlie was the kind of guy who could knock on your door unexpectedly at 11:30 p.m. on a Saturday night with a copy of the Sunday Times under his arm and a bag full of warm bagels, and you'd be happy to see him.
And I am all alone. There is no one here beside me. And my problems have all gone. There is no one, no one to deride me. But you got to have friends, the feeling's oh so strong. You got to have friends to make that day last long. I had some friends, but they're...
Eventually, Charlie joined the Air Force. I had no idea why. Perhaps it was an attempt to avoid dying in Vietnam. Recruiters had a way of promising things to people who were worried about the draft in return for their signature. Most of them wound up dead on the other side of the world, but Charlie was lucky. He wound up in Thule, Greenland. I say lucky, but I could never imagine myself surviving in such a godforsaken frozen wasteland. After a fairly short tour in Greenland, Charlie wound up stationed at McGuire Air Force Base in New Jersey, maybe an hour's drive from my home. It was almost as if he wasn't in the service. Every weekend, he was at my door. This period became a test of our friendship. When I say that every weekend Charlie was at my door, that is not just an exaggeration. It was every weekend. It was seemingly every moment that he wasn't at the Air Force Base, he was at our house. We all love Charlie, but sometimes you need a little space, even from your spouse. In fact, it began to seem sometimes that Roz and I saw more of Charlie than we saw of each other. It got to the point where Charlie didn't even seem to respond to hints. He came and he stayed. He stayed and he stayed. I remember one night in particular, I was doing my best to indicate that it was late, we were tired, and heading for bed. Charlie wasn't getting the hint. Then Roz just said, "Good night," and went to bed. Charlie simply said good night to her and poured himself another iced tea. I suppose I should have been more direct, but it was hard for me to reject such a good friend. Finally, with drooping eyelids, I started taking my clothes off. Still, he didn't seem to get it. I was eventually standing there in the dining room, stark naked, and I simply said, "Well, I'm off to bed. Good night, Charlie." I walked off, leaving him sitting there at the table, amazed at my inability to get through to him. Today, I feel as bad about what I did that night as anything I have ever done. Charlie was there because he needed us to be there for him. I blew him off as being selfish and uncaring, when I was really the one that fit that description. Not too long after that, Charlie was at our house, and we were celebrating some event. I think it was his birthday. Whatever it was, we had given him a greeting card. Inside the greeting card, I wrote something off the top of my head. It was totally silly, and it was meant to possibly have some fun with him. I wrote, "Don't worry, we know what your secret is." I truly have no idea how I come up with that particular line. We had no such knowledge. In fact, we had no idea that there was any secret. I just figured that knowing Charlie, it would bug him. He would want to know what the secret was that we were referring to. He did not disappoint me. He was obsessed with it. So much so that I eventually confessed and said that I was sorry, but I had just made it all up and that it referred to nothing at all. A week later, I went with him on a drive to the Air Force base. He was off duty, but he needed to go there to retrieve some item. During the drive there, it came up again. "What is the secret that you know about me?" I was stunned. "Damn, Charlie, get over it. There is no secret. It was just a stupid joke. I made it up out of thin air. Why the hell is it so important? Do you have a big secret that you're worried about?" He finally seemed to get it, because he didn't ask about it anymore that day. I thought I was finally past that stupid joke, but I was wrong. A week later, he was back at our dining room table, and he was there to talk with us about the secret. Charlie got right to the point. "I know that you don't want to say anything about the secret, but obviously you know what I've been hiding all these years." He swore to me that he'd never tell anyone, but I guess your father told you that I'm gay. Wait a minute. My father knows this? You could have knocked me over with a feather. I don't know why, but this was the farthest thing from my mind. I had no freaking clue. This was the biggest bombshell ever dropped on me in my life. I was so devastated that I don't even have a clear picture in my mind of anything that took place at that point in the conversation. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't devastated in any way that I think most guys might think. I was not reacting in any way to the issue of homosexuality. That had nothing at all to do with my dismay. I was completely and utterly ashamed. Ashamed of what kind of shallow bastard I must be that one of my best friends was afraid to tell me for 10 years... that he was gay. What kind of image had I projected? that could possibly have made him believe that telling the truth would risk our friendship. I was crushed. I wasn't hurt by Charlie. I was hurt by my own apparent shallowness. I will never feel as bad about myself as I did on that day.
As if the choice were mine to make, but you can make decisions too, and you can have this heart to break. And so it goes, and so it goes, and you're the only one who knows.
Eventually, I got the opportunity to atone for my sins against my good friend. Charlie was starting to come out to the entire world. But he was in no way confident about himself. After leaving the Air Force, he got a job at a gay bookstore in Greenwich Village. Charlie was assigned by his boss at the bookstore to represent the store at a booth at the famous Firehouse in New York City, home of the Gay Activist Alliance. Charlie was terrified. He came to me. He asked me to go with him to this gay fair, to offer support and help him through this important step in his life. I had no choice. I said yes. On the day of the gay fair, I went with him to the famous firehouse, which was actually a real retired firehouse complete with a brass pole. As I walked up the spiral staircase to the second floor where the bookstore's booth was set up, I was actually groped several times by anonymous strangers. I was perhaps even more terrified than my gay friend, but I stood firm and spent the day offering strength to my good buddy, despite hearing things like, "Step right up and buy our cakes and cookies untouched by straight hands." I think I was redeemed. We are now rapidly approaching retirement age, and we are still lifelong friends. But that incident, as I was turning 26, was an epiphany for me. It was a spark that lit a fire of self-examination. It was a year that I realized many important things. Not only were half the people I knew gay, but I came to realize just how many people loved me, despite my hard candy shell. I became obsessed with deserving that love. Charlie's one crushing announcement changed my whole life forever, and I will always be thankful for that.
There I was in uniform, looking at the art teacher. I was just a girl then. Never have I loved since then. He was not that much older than I was. He had taken our class to Metropolitan Museum. He asked us what our favorite work of art was. Never could I tell him it was him. Oh, I wish wish I could tell him. Oh, I wish I could have told him. I looked at the Rubens and Rembrandts. I liked the John Singer Sargent. He told me he liked Turner. Never have I turned since then. No, never have I turned since.
And there you have it, another edition of Radio Free Radio's Digital Flotsam. I suppose more than anyone else, I need to thank my old friend Charlie for making this story, for making the person I am today, possible. I haven't seen Charlie in ages, but we still exchange emails now and then. He's retired and living like a king on a beach in Thailand. There will, of course, be more information in the show notes at digitalflotsam.org.
Hold the microphone.